Merrily on High, a Merlin fanfic by Numerd, read by Sophie Nisba. The main pairing of this fic is Gwen Morgana. Other pairings include Merlin Morgana, Morgana Morgose, and Arthur Merlin. The rating is NC-17. This fic involves grief over the loss of a parent, minor sexual contact between teenagers, and consensual kinky sex between adults. Merrily on High, Part 1. Back! Morgana dumped a bag of last-minute groceries, bread, milk, king-size Cadbury fruit and nut, trail mix, and some disgustingly cheap wine, on the floor in the hall, and began to peel off her gloves. Bloody freezing out there! Right, Gwen's voice came from the living room, slightly muffled. Great. You hungry yet? Morgana shrugged her jacket from her shoulders and shook it, trying to rid it of some of the beads of moisture clinging to its exterior. Only the chip shop's closing early, with it being Christmas Eve and all, so if you don't want that now, we're just going to have whatever's in the freezer. This didn't garner an audible response, so Morgana rolled her eyes, kicked off her boots, and, picking up the shopping bag, padded through to their kitchen. Anybody call whilst I was out? No. No sign of Merlin and Arthur, then.
Well, that's helpful of them, isn't it? Morgana sighed. They were meant to be doing Christmas lunch the next day. When am I meant to know when to put the turkey on? Merlin had better be here early to help. Wouldn't be Christmas without his chestnut stuffing, and that takes a good hour to do properly before anything else. Morgana paused, sliding the milk into the fridge next to the champagne, putting the bread in the freezer. Something about Gwen's voice sounded a little off. You okay, babe? What? Oh, yeah. She still sounded sort of muffled, though. Morgana quirked one eyebrow at herself in the reflective surface of the oven's top. Picking up the Cadbury's fruit and nut, she headed towards the living room next door. Talk to me, Gwen. I'm fine. Gwen was hunched over on the sofa, face in her hands, watching the credits for The Snowman scrolling across the TV screen and looking miserable as sin. She had, most definitely, been crying. Morgana sighed. Oh, Gwen. I'm fine. Gwen's assertion of this fact was, if possible, even less convincing than it had been the first time around. She managed a quick, watery smile and then scrubbed her eyes with the back of her hand, which really only served to redden them. You're an idiot, Morgana informed her, fondly, before dropping onto the sofa next to her and pulling her close. A total idiot. It's just a really sad film, Gwen informed her, now muffled by Morgana's arm, before breaking down completely and beginning to sob. Yes, I'm sure it is, Morgana agreed, placing a gentle hand on her back and beginning to rub in soft, soothing circles. Nothing to do with your dad, and this being the first Christmas you'll have without him, and you feeling so wretched about it you could puke, me being such an insensitive arse who can't tell when you need a hug more than you need chocolate and trail mix. Gwen managed a quick, shaky snort of laughter through her tears. Nothing to do with it, she mumbled, huddling closer to her girlfriend and sighing deeply into her shoulder. I know you always used to watch The Snowman together on Christmas Eve, Morgana pointed out. But did you really think it would be a good idea to break it out now? I always watched on Christmas Eve, though, Gwen told her miserably. Every year since I was a baby. I can't not this year just because he isn't here. She gasped and shuddered again, squeezing her eyes closed. I know. Morgana planted a tender kiss on the top of her head. It's okay. Come here. Come here. They rearranged themselves on the sofa so that Gwen could get more firmly ensconced in Morgana's arms, curling up together in one corner, Morgana taking care to fit her limbs around and about Gwen's, holding tight as if she could contain her grief within her own body. I'm sorry, Gwen mumbled, and she had her cheek laid against Morgana's collarbone and had curled her fingers about the neck of Morgana's t-shirt like a child. It's been 9 months. I thought I would be okay, you know? 9 months is nowhere near enough time for you to be okay, Morgana assured her gently. Grief happens for years, Gwen. You're going to be allowed to be in bits on Christmas Eve for a long time yet. But I don't want to be, Gwen moaned. I love Christmas. It shouldn't make me sad. Something is very wrong with a world that has sad Christmases. You wouldn't be sad all the time, Morgana promised her. Just take it on a sort of hour-by-hour basis, okay? Gwen sighed, turning up her face to kiss Morgana's jaw. I hate feeling like this. I hate how it keeps coming back. I'm okay for weeks and weeks, and I think I'm finally getting back to normal, and then something happens. I'm just a mess. That's normal. I know. Gwen huddled closer to her. Sometimes I think I'm okay, and I can accept how my life is now. And other times I want him back. I want my dad back, you know? I want him back, and I get all... It seems so unfair. Her voice cracked, and she shut her eyes again. Morgana hushed her gently, feeling her shoulders shake, those deep, anguished sobs bubbling up from somewhere dark and hidden. It's okay, Gwen, she promised softly. It'll be okay. No, it won't, Gwen insisted harshly. Nothing's ever going to be okay, ever again, and... Oh, shh, Morgana admonished, not unkindly. How are you ever going to convince me to have sex with you again if you're getting all melodramatically emo? You're a horrible girlfriend, Gwen informed her, hugging her a little tighter. I know. It took about half an hour for Gwen to calm down and really regain a semblance of her normal self. Morgana was used to her having these bouts of deep, wretched grief. She had been having them at irregular intervals over the past 6 months, after the first few weeks of intense mourning had gradually petered out. Gwen's father had fallen down in a car park one day 9 months ago, and then never got up again. Brain hemorrhage, the doctor said, a vessel that had burst. Undetectable, unpreventable, tragic, the doctors had said. It had broken Gwen so thoroughly that for a long time Morgana had been truly scared that she was never going to see the vaguest semblance of the woman she knew and loved beyond reason, ever, ever again. Eventually, however, she had begun to reemerge, in a very Gwen-like way, just trying to pick herself up and get on with things, as if nothing had happened. Sometimes she managed it so well that Morgana forgot how fragile she still was. It was just when little things like this tripped her up and opened that yawning chasm of bereavement in her soul that she remembered that Gwen was still grieving. At least once a month she would be awake, as she always was at odd hours of the night, usually in the kitchen, feverishly trying out new recipes for gravy or scones or something. And she would hear Gwen desperately trying not to be heard, crying in their bedroom. Sometimes she let her cry on her own. Sometimes, she knew, grief just needed to be experienced in isolation and held close, being, as it was, the last pearls of the person you had lost, sticking to your soul and making you wretched. But most of the time she would turn off the stove and go and climb into bed beside her girlfriend and wrap her up as she was doing now and tell Gwen that she was still alive, still close and real and warm, and that for now that could be enough. I love you, Morgana. Gwen's voice was a little shaky but reassuringly devoid of tears. I know, babe. Morgana pressed her lips to the other woman's temple. I love you too. Thanks for putting up with me being all... Oh, shut up. Clearly I'll just have to shag some sense into you tonight. Gwen giggled. Morgana remembered very well the first time that they had kissed. They'd both been 14 and had been pedaling around the local park on their bikes. It had been late summer, almost the end of the holidays, the last week, in fact, and they'd been making the most of it. Arthur, Morgana's little stepbrother, had been ill, so they hadn't been forced, as they usually were, to let him tag along. And it was just them, and everything had felt all glorious and free. Morgana's mum had married Arthur's father when she was 12, and they'd all moved to Bath, from Ireland and London, respectively, into the house next door to the one where Gwen and her dad lived. Morgana had not been particularly happy with the arrangement at first, because she'd had to move school, and she didn't want a new dad, and she definitely didn't want a new little brother. But the presence of a nice girl her own age next door had significantly softened the blow of the upheaval. She had determined from the day they'd moved to make Gwen her best friend, and Gwen had never seemed to have any major objection to such a plan. They walked to school together every morning and walked home together every afternoon.
They weren't in many of the same classes at the local comprehensive, but they did usually have P.E. together, and so they could muck about at the back, practicing handstands instead of what the teacher told them to be doing. They shared lunches and sweets and secrets, and they braided each other's hair, and they got each other into trouble. They had sleepovers every other weekend, and they slept in the same bed, folded together like kittens tucked in a blanket. Gwen's dad called them the twins, and Morgana liked going round to their house because they always had fun things for tea, like baked beans and sausages, or potato smileys or SpaghettiOs. Mum and Uther always made her and Arthur boring normal stuff like soup and ratatouille and couscous. Plus, at Gwen's house, they could watch TV straight after school instead of having to do their homework, and they could stay up till 10 instead of 9. But yeah, they were 14 the first time they kissed. Morgana had known what lesbians were. She knew what gay meant, but such labels were alien and distant. They were playground taunts, and they were people on the news, and they were words used in sex ed. Nothing to do with her. She didn't know that she wanted to kiss Gwen until they were both off their bikes at the top of a steep, grassy slope that led down to the duck pond. It was starting to get close to tea time. Morgana's stomach was rumbling, and most of the people at the duck pond were going home. But she and Gwen dropped their bikes anyway and raced each other to the bottom. Realizing that she was losing, Morgana had tried to grab at her friend and hold her back, and Gwen had yelped and shrieked and laughed at her. And then they'd both lost their footing and ended up tumbling and tussling in the grass, each trying to escape the fall before the other in an attempt to get up and start running again. They ended up sprawling two-thirds of the way down, with Morgana, who had always been the taller and stronger of them, straddling Gwen's hips and pinning her wrists above her head. "Gotcha," she said triumphantly, and Gwen had been laughing. "Bitch, let me up! Fuck off!" Morgana always took great pleasure in swearing when she was with Gwen, because it was something she was never allowed to do at home. They continued to giggle at each other for a moment, and then Gwen had tired of the game. "Are you going to let me up, or what?" Morgana had said, and then she'd kissed her. It hadn't been a particularly elegant gesture, a quick, clumsy press of her mouth to Gwen's, quite hard. Gwen had just gaped at her. "What did you do that for?" "Dunno." Morgana had shrugged, honestly. "Just wanted to, that's all." "Are you gay or something?" "Don't be daft." And that had been that. It had not been until about a year later, when Morgana was starting to notice the other girls at school, the way they rolled the hemlines of their uniform skirts up to show their bony knees, and the way their eyes were harsh under their mascara, and their lips always looked wet with gloss, like a doll's, that anything truly sexual happened between them. Mostly by accident. Gwen had found her dad's stash of dirty magazines in the shed. She had, of course, immediately called Morgana, who had come running over. And they'd sat amongst the cobwebs in the upturned flower pots and shrieked and giggled at the naked women. "Oh my God, look! Look at this one!" Morgana had flourished the first to really catch her eye. "Look, they're all tied up!" Gwen had yelped, appalled. "Oh, God! Dad's kinky!" And they both collapsed into giggles again. But Morgana had stuffed the magazine into her bag later, when Gwen wasn't looking, and taken it home, and studied it in more detail that night under the bed covers with a torch. It had sent something shivering between her legs, looking at those women, looking at the ropes and the gags and the whip marks. She'd pored over each and every image every night for weeks afterwards, and then she brought it back over to Gwen's on her next sleepover. "Is that one of Dad's old..." "Oh, yuck, Morgana, why did you nick it?" Gwen had groaned. "That's my dad's porn." "Shut up," Morgana had flushed, but managed a quick grin. "It's kind of interesting, okay?" Gwen had looked at her funny, but not said anything else. Just put the magazine back with the others, and they hadn't talked about it again. Later that night, tucked up like usual in Gwen's bed, Morgana had said, "Gwen, have you ever kissed a boy?" "Nope," Gwen had shrugged. "Besides, you know that. I would have told you if I had." "Just thought I'd check." Morgana had paused, rubbed one eye to take away a phantom itch. "What do you think it's like, kissing? Do you think it's wet? I always think it must be wetter than the movies make it look. Gwen had giggled. You kissed me once, remember? Was that wet? No, but I don't know that that really counts. You're a girl. Well, it's still mouths and stuff. They both giggled at the idea, and then Morgana had felt something in her stomach curl up tight, and she'd taken a breath. Can I kiss you again? Just to see. Okay, Gwen had shrugged. No tongue, though. Yuck. Morgana had laughed, breathless. Okay. Gwen had rolled onto her back, and Morgana, lying beside her, had leant down before her nerve could fail her, and gently, gently pressed her lips to her friend's. She'd mostly gotten Gwen's lower lip, had felt her twitch and squirm a little, and then she'd tried to move, but it was dark, and she was never quite sure how it happened, but suddenly Gwen had tipped her head back, and she got more of her mouth, her whole mouth, really. And she was so soft, and she smelled nice, and it felt a bit weird, but not bad, and... Oh, Gwen had whispered a moment later, as Morgana realized that she was laying almost completely on top of her, and that they were both a little short of breath. Do you want to, Yes, and Morgana had kissed her again, and it was real all of a sudden, and rushing, and brilliant. She felt funny and fierce and excited, but there was nothing more important than Gwen, who was perfect and sweet and funny and her best friend, and who was tugging gently at the collar of her pajama top, kissing her back. She skimmed one trembling hand down Gwen's side to the tops of her pajama bottoms and held on there. Gwen had pushed her gently, and they'd ended up on their sides, pressed close together, hot and sweaty beneath the duvet. Morgana had used her free hand to very delicately touch Gwen's nose, skim the outline of her lips. Gwen. Gwen, do you love me? Gwen had asked abruptly. Do you, Morgana? I mean, really, properly, like adults love each other. I don't know. Morgana's head had been spinning. Gwen's breath was hot on her cheek. She'd wrapped her arms about her and held on tight. We'll always be best friends, won't we? Yes, Gwen nodded and kissed her again, just softly. Promise. But the next morning, Gwen had slipped out of bed without a word, giving her only a quick, shy glance. And Morgana had thought that perhaps she hadn't liked being kissed so much after all, and now her friend was embarrassed, so she didn't mention it again. After her GCSEs, when she was 16, Gwen decided to leave school and go to the technical college down the road. She wanted to become a mechanic, like her father. Morgana was angry with her. "What do you want to do a stupid thing like that for?" she demanded when Gwen told her. "You can't drop out without your A-levels, for God's sake." I can get A-levels at college, Gwen insisted, only a slight twitching of her brow betraying how much Morgana's words stung. And it's not like I need them, if I want to become a mechanic. But I thought you wanted to study French. What am I supposed to do with French? Gwen asked. It's great and all, but it's not going to make me a living. Not unless I want to be a teacher, and I want to be a mechanic. A French-speaking mechanic? Gwen did not look amused. Morgana began to see less and less of her after that summer. The college took up a lot of her time, and Morgana got the distinct sense that she was being avoided, which hurt. They stopped having sleepovers. Morgana threw herself into her A-levels, and into her first dalliance with a girl in the year below her, who was happy to be told what to do, and just smiled and blushed a lot when Morgana felt her up behind the bike sheds. It was easy, and it was pleasantly distracting. She told Arthur that she was fairly sure she was gay. Arthur blinked at her stupidly over his cereal for a moment. They were in the kitchen, having breakfast. He opened his mouth, then closed it again, then said, "Better not tell Dad." "I wasn't going to." "I got into Oxford," Morgana told Gwen when it happened. She was standing in her back garden and had just seen Gwen walk into hers. "Oh," Gwen said, "that's good." "Yeah," Morgana agreed. "What are you going to study?" Gwen quirked her head,
and Morgana felt that yawning sense of loss. A year ago, such a gap in Gwen's knowledge would have been unthinkable. Law. Wow. Gwen looked down, then up again. I thought you wanted to be a chef.
I did. I do. Morgana shrugged. It's just, law's a better option, stability-wise.
Yeah. Morgana had taken to cooking when she couldn't sleep. She'd had trouble getting to sleep ever since her father had died, when she was 7. At least, that was the first time she could remember truly going for long stretches without going to bed. But it had started to happen more systematically as she hit her teens. Her mum had taken her to doctors about it, even to a special sleep clinic and a neurologist, but they all mostly just said vague things about stress and hormones, and that she would grow out of it. Also that she should stop getting up to cook, and by proximity eat, in the middle of the night. Morgana had not stopped doing this. She liked to bake, in particular, liked the mess and ordered chaos of it, patting the dough to the right consistency, putting it into the oven as one thing and taking it out as another, like magic. But she liked all sorts of cooking. She began to experiment with soups, and then with meat. She hung around the supermarkets after school, spending her money on new, interesting-looking ingredients, dragged Gwen with her when they were still properly friends. She began to write down recipes. She thought, idly, about what it would be like to own a restaurant. Top quality, 5 stars, written up in all the papers. Hundreds of pounds for a meal, all the celebrities coming to dine there. She never told anyone about it, though. No one but Gwen. It was just a silly dream. She left home for Oxford and immediately hated law, just as she had known, deep down, that she would. The pressure to do well was immense, and the stress of the workload was compounded by homesickness and the growing sense that she had no wish to be where she was. She began to go for days at a time without sleep, and she wished she was still close enough to Gwen to phone her. Late one night, in the kitchens in the hall she lived in, having just perfected the art of short-crust pastry with her first-ever successful steak-and-kidney pie, she met a boy called Merlin, who had been attracted by the smell. "Do you like to cook?" he'd asked, looking sleepy and befuddled in blue-and-white striped pajamas and Doctor Who slippers, smiling vaguely. "Yeah," she'd replied, feeling oddly self-conscious, given that she had flour all over her dressing gown, and it was 3:30 in the morning, and she had another essay due in 2 days that she hadn't even started with. "Me too," he told her, brightly, and suddenly she'd had a friend. Merlin was studying English, but, like her, preferred cooking. He had been afraid to admit to such a thing, though, because he was trying hard enough to hide the fact that he was frequently attracted to men as it was from his parents. He thought the idea that he wanted to spend every waking moment of his life in the kitchen might be a step too far for his already suspicious father. Late at night, they would sit up in the college kitchens, cooking 4-course gourmet meals and plotting their escape from Oxford. Morgana stopped going to lectures and started writing up new recipes. She pursued a number of pretty girls and slept with as many of them as would let her spank them before she fucked them. She slept with Merlin a couple of times as a sort of experiment. He wanted to find out whether he really could still be attracted to women as well as men, and she was curious. She'd never slept with a bloke, not even thought about it before, and she wanted to know what it was like. And Merlin was nice, sweet. He had an intensity and drive about him that made him good at a lot of things, including sex. He didn't have much experience, but he had plenty of passion and imagination, and it was pretty damn good, all things considered. She was fairly sure she didn't want to sleep with any other men, but she could make an exception for Merlin. He even let her tie him up a couple of times. Within a few weeks of their first meeting, Merlin had discovered a cookery school across town. A 1-year certified course, acting in conjunction with an agency to funnel graduates straight into jobs, highly prestigious, known to attract people from Europe and America, as well as from up and down the country. Astronomical fees, of course. But there were a couple of scholarships going, and, by Morgana's calculations, 1 year of full-time employment would be enough to pay back any debts incurred in paying the fees. She took a deep breath and filled out the application form at 4 a.m, whilst seated next to Merlin in the kitchens again, watching her chocolate souffles rise in the nearest oven.
Then she lived a week of abject terror at the thought that she might get in. And it still shocked her when they phoned up and asked for an interview. They interviewed Merlin as well, and by the end of their first term at Oxford, they both had full scholarships to Gaius's School for the Culinary Arts and were scrambling to arrange accommodation, formally drop out of the university, and keep what they were doing from their respective parents. Morgana had no idea how she would explain the situation to Uther and her mother. She hadn't even so much as mentioned Merlin to them, let alone hinted that she was unhappy with law or wished to pursue something outside of university altogether. The fact was that people like her were meant to get a degree after they finished school. She wasn't like Gwen, whose dad worked in a garage. Morgana's mom was a dentist, her father had been a GP, and Uther was headmaster of a posh boys' school. Everyone in their family had been to university. Every one of her parents' friends had been. She had serious doubts about their ability to understand how much more she would rather be conjuring miracles out of a bowl of flour, milk, butter, and eggs than earning a law degree from Oxford. Merlin left a couple of days earlier than she did, heading back to South Wales, just as nervous as she was about trying to explain to his mum and dad what was going on. He turned up at the door to her room less than 24 hours later, with a horribly swollen lip and his rucksack, looking sheepish. "Well, I told them." "Oh, God!" She looked him up and down. There was blood from his lip on his t-shirt. His trainers were soaked and covered in mud. "What happened?" Merlin scratched his head, swaying a little alarmingly. "I might have also mentioned that I wanted to shag one of the blokes in my hall." Dad wasn't exactly thrilled. "I'm sorry," Morgana sighed, letting him in and taking his rucksack off him. "Did they chuck you out?" "Mum didn't want to, but I think it'll be easier this way. Give Dad some time to cool down." Merlin still looked sheepish. "You think they'd actually let me stay in the halls for the break?" "Come back with me," Morgana suggested, suddenly liking very much the idea of having someone with her to hold her hand when she told Mum and Uther what she'd done. "My parents won't mind." "Are you sure?" "Well, after dropping out of uni, I don't think me bringing a stranger back to the house is going to be high on their list of things to be unhappy with me about." Morgana packed the last of her stuff into her car and drove them both back to Bath. On arriving, she used her most gently concerned expression and explained that Merlin's parents had thrown him out because he was gay, and she couldn't possibly have left him with nowhere to stay over Christmas. Uther seemed reluctant, but Morgana's mum was sympathetic, and Arthur just shrugged, glanced up from a football magazine in the living room as they stepped into the hall, and grunted something that might have been a greeting. Because Merlin was gay, he was allowed to sleep on the floor in Morgana's room, although, of course, he very quickly migrated into her bed. They didn't have any condoms, so they just used their mouths, and it was good, and afterwards Merlin curled up next to her, all pale, clammy skin and bony limbs, and pretended not to cry into her pillows. Morgana wrapped herself around him. "I'm sorry about your parents, Merlin." He didn't reply for a bit, but he did stop crying. "You'll be okay," she promised him. "See, I'm not going anywhere, am I?" He nodded and kissed her. Then he asked, "Is your brother single?" She waited until Christmas Eve to tell her parents that she had dropped out of uni. She did it deliberately, so that she could then insist on preparing Christmas dinner to prove to them that she knew what she was doing. Uther shouted several choice words, and her mom went a color Morgana had never seen on any human being before. But she folded her arms and stood her ground, and Arthur, abruptly, suggested that it was better a chef than a boring lawyer anyway. She and Merlin spent the next 24 hours in the kitchen, preparing what Morgana was determined must be a masterpiece. And all in all, it was. Merlin had made chestnut stuffing like he'd come out of the womb preparing the stuff. The turkey was a little dry, but that was mostly because neither of them were used to working with such a large roast. Everything else was almost entirely perfect, and certainly Arthur stuffed his face at Christmas dinner. Uther, at least, did not say anything more on the subject, and Morgana's mother only smiled wearily and gave her arm a squeeze. "I suppose, as long as you're being productive." That was blessing enough for now. Sleeping pressed against Merlin in her bed every night, as she had once done with Gwen, Morgana began to wonder about her childhood companion. She thought with distant bemusement about kissing Gwen in the park, and then again that time after returning her dad's kinky magazine. She remembered how it had felt to run her hands over her friend's pajamas and the soft little gasps Gwen had made around every kiss. She'd been so soft and so sweet and so warm. But there was the sting, too, of her silence in the morning, that shy, embarrassed look, the way she had scurried from the room and never spoken of the encounter again. Morgana had felt a little wash of shame about it, really. However much Gwen had had her own mischievous streak, she had always been just that little bit subservient, doing exactly as she was told the vast majority of the time. She'd probably only kissed Morgana because Morgana had started it to begin with, gone along with it because she didn't know how to say no. It had been a shameful thing to do, to foist herself on her friend like that. She had half a mind to go next door and attempt some kind of apology for the entire incident, but her mum had said that Gwen and her dad had gone away for the holiday, something about visiting relatives in Birmingham. She and Merlin started cookery school in the new year under the tutelage of an ancient and terrifying chef called Gaius and a number of other instructors. Morgana slept first with the red-headed one called Nimue, promised herself she would not make the mistake of sleeping with a teacher ever again, and then promptly got drunk and shagged Margot's, the other one. How on earth so many lesbian cookery instructors had congregated in one place, Morgana had no idea, but it made for some awkward moments during the last few months of her time there. By the following Christmas, however, she had graduated with glowing commendations from the instructors that she hadn't slept with, and had just begun to work as a pastry chef in a small pâtisserie near Oxford Street. She needed the work experience so that she could find a kitchen that would take her on as a commis. Merlin, of course, had almost immediately found himself a place as a commis in one of the best French restaurants in London, but he was a lucky bastard like that. His parents still weren't talking to him, however, and so Morgana couldn't quite find it in herself to envy him. His birthday was spent with her, eating what they'd made in training that day, and watching old episodes of Doctor Who, and at Christmas she once again brought him up to stay with her parents. It wasn't until the New Year's party that she saw Gwen, though. Uther and Morgana's mum held a party like they always did, and this time Gwen and her dad hadn't been away, so they came, like normal. But somehow, Morgana hadn't been expecting to see Gwen. She came out of the kitchen, dusting icing sugar off of her jeans, having just put the finishing touches to the cake Mum had asked her to make for the occasion. And there, at the bottom of the stairs, talking to Arthur, there was Gwen. Part 2. She looked well. Morgana couldn't remember really fancying her when they were younger. She'd liked Gwen, had been vaguely aware that she was quite pretty and really nice, but she hadn't registered her as someone she could be attracted to, per se, even with that clumsy groping session in Gwen's bed. All of a sudden, though, Gwen looked amazing. Maybe she'd actually changed her appearance a bit. Maybe it was time giving Morgana some perspective on her friend, but Gwen was utterly, disarmingly gorgeous. She was wearing a soft lavender dress. Morgana couldn't remember her in anything but jeans and t-shirts and school uniform before, and heels, and she'd let her hair grow naturally. When they were younger, Gwen had been obsessive about trying to get her hair to fall as straight as Morgana's did. She didn't like her curls, felt they were unmanageable and frizzy and unattractive. And of course, all the chemicals she used to straighten them meant that when she stopped straightening, they were frizzy and unmanageable, and her hair was always brittle and dry, always breaking before it got past her chin. Now it was falling in thick, glassy corkscrews down past her shoulders and held a series of glittering butterfly clips. She had these long, sinewy legs and toned arms and delicately varnished nails. Her eyes. How had Morgana never noticed her eyes? She was beautiful, and she was even more so when she smiled. Morgana! She held out her arms automatically, and Morgana was suddenly enveloped in a soapy lavender scent in her hair and her skin and her hands sliding down her back. Hi! Oh, wow, it's been ages! Hi, Morgana managed, realizing that she'd never felt quite so off balance around a girl in her life before. You look amazing. Well, God, that was sort of pathetic. Thanks, Gwen offered, as Arthur flashed Morgana a sly grin and slunk away, leaving them alone in the hall. So, Morgana drew breath. How are you? Good, good, Gwen shrugged. Finished college, been working at Dad's garage for a bit. Oh, right, Morgana replied. You work for your dad, then? Yeah. Gwen's smile betrayed only a hint of self-consciousness about the fact. I know it sounds a bit... But it's all right, you know? We get on. Yeah, yeah, Morgana nodded, stuffing her hands into her pockets to give her something to do with them. Do you, want to get a drink? I know where Uther keeps the good liquor. Gwen's grin was quick and self-conscious and warm. Yeah, sure. It did not take Morgana long to dig Uther's expensive Russian beer out from behind a chest of drawers in the cloakroom. He imports it. Thinks Mum doesn't know, she told Gwen. Arthur found it a while back, though. Gwen took the bottle that Morgana offered her, and Morgana, picking up three more, led her back out into the hall, then up the stairs to her bedroom. They ended up sat cross-legged on the bed like they used to do when they were 15 years old, picking over trashy magazines and sipping from the single can of Stella Gwen might have nicked from her dad's fridge and brought over, feeling rebellious and grown up. Arthur said you're a pastry chef, Gwen began abruptly. Morgana shrugged. I suppose I am. Not a lawyer, then? There was something slightly teasing in Gwen's eyes, and Morgana smiled, glancing away. Law was boring. That was brave, though, Gwen pointed out, dropping out of Oxford. Don't know if I'd have had the guts. You dropped out of school to do what you wanted to do, Morgana told her. That was brave. Not really. Gwen was sipping her beer. I knew whatever happened, Dad would always give me a job, and I'd be all right. Your parents... I mean, I can't imagine Uther reacted well when you told them. Not as badly as Merlin's parents reacted, Morgana replied, then added, to Gwen's quizzical look, My friend, we dropped out of Oxford together, went to cookery school together. His parents threw him out when he told them. He's around here somewhere, actually. He doesn't talk to his mum and dad anymore, so he has to come back with me for Christmas. Can't exactly leave him on his own. Poor bloke, Gwen's brow furrowed. All that over cookery school? Well, that and the fact that he wants to shag other men. Ah. How are you doing on that front anyway? Gwen asked. Does your mum know you're sleeping with girls? What makes you think I sleep with girls? Morgana asked, falsely innocent. Gwen snorted. Oh, I don't know. Your fascination with my dad's porn magazines when we were younger? You drooling all over that girl in sixth form for a year? And those times you felt me up under the duvet covers on our sleepovers? Morgana feigned outrage. I never felt you up. You did, Gwen laughed. You groped me like it was going out of style, Morgana. Well, not that often, Gwen giggled. So I was imagining most of it then. Clearly. Wishful thinking, I suppose. Gwen laughed again, but suddenly Morgana's ears had picked up because Gwen looked sort of coy. She swallowed another mouthful of beer. That's a nice dress. Thanks. Gwen tugged at the hem a little self-consciously. Dad bought it for me. Spent a ridiculous amount of money on it, so I have to wear it, you know. It suits you, Morgana told her, honestly. The color made her skin look luminous, brought out her eyes. Don't think I ever saw you in a dress when we were growing up. Oh, except maybe that school dance when we both deliberately wore the most hideously frilly things we could find. Do you remember? Gwen's smile curled tentatively at the corners of her lips, not sure whether Morgana was flirting with her or not. Dad thought we'd gone mad. Well, it was a laugh. Morgana waved a hand. We did look a bit insane, though, Gwen pointed out, with something like nostalgia in her voice. I mean, you looked amazing anyway, but still. I looked daft. Morgana dismissed the idea with a toss of her head, but Gwen only smiled. You looked amazing. You always looked amazing, she informed her with a shrug.
I always reckoned it was your legs." She tipped her head sideways to cast a critical gaze on them now, and Morgana felt suddenly self-conscious. "Yours were never exactly lacking," she nudged her old friend, "especially in that dress." For a moment, Gwen's smile was like daybreak after a storm, fresh and brilliant. Then she got up a little hurriedly. "We should be downstairs. People will be missing us." "Yeah." Morgana wasn't sure why she felt disappointed. She followed Gwen downstairs. At midnight, she almost had the nerve to pull Gwen aside and snog her as the new year broke, but stalled at the last minute, and they only exchanged a slightly awkward hug. Merlin was drunk enough to plant one on Arthur while Truther's back was turned, and somehow Arthur managed to look only a little stunned, rather than like he might be about to hit the other man. The next day, Morgana went round to Gwen's, with some of the cake left over from the party. It was past 2 in the afternoon, frosty and clear, but already beginning to look like evening, the winter shutting the afternoon down and tugging the sun back towards the horizon. Gwen answered the door in a dressing gown. "Did I wake you up?" Morgana asked apologetically. "What? Oh, no." Gwen shook her head, glossy cloud of unruly curls quivering emphatically. "I just haven't done much today. Dad's still sleeping off his hangover, so..." "Well, I thought you might want some cake," Morgana offered, feeling a little silly all of a sudden. "If Arthur eats any more of it, he'll be a diabetic by the end of the month, which, you know, not a great way to start the year." "Hmm," Gwen agreed, her eyes lighting with amusement. "Okay, come in then." Morgana followed Gwen into the kitchen, gazing around her at the surroundings that still felt so incredibly familiar, despite it being something like 4 years since she had last set foot in them. There was the place on the wall they'd once knocked a shelf off, with the wrench marks in the wallpaper still there. The old technicolored plastic letters on the fridge. Gwen's art projects from her junior school days still up there alongside a couple of new photos. Gwen and her dad in overalls at his garage, presumably after Gwen had started working there. Gwen at a party with some people Morgana didn't recognize. There was the cactus still quietly dying on the kitchen windowsill. There was the charcoal sketch of Gwen's mom up on the wall. An empty vase in the middle of the table. Whenever there were flowers to be had, out in the park, Gwen used to bring them back to put in the vase. None to be had this time of year, of course. "It's good cake, though," Gwen told Morgana, as they picked their way through it with forks at the table. "You made this?" "Yep," Morgana swallowed a mouthful. "Wow," Gwen grinned. "It's what I do for a living," Morgana pointed out. "And someone needs to appreciate my genius. Here, look, 3 different layers, right? Chocolate, orange, and vanilla. You have to eat them together." She speared fragments of each on her fork and pressed them into Gwen's mouth before she could protest. "See?" she grinned as she watched Gwen's eyes widen slightly. Gwen covered her mouth to stop herself spitting out the cake as she giggled. "You're a genius," she managed, the words a little muted around the mouthful. "Oh, you know I am." Morgana winked at her, then forked up another piece of cake for herself. They went for a walk and ended up wandering along through the park they'd spent so much time in when they were younger, following the cycle path past the kids' climbing frame and the tennis courts, towards the hill that led down to the duck pond. "You kissed me down here once. Do you remember?" Gwen asked abruptly. The weak winter sunlight was caught in the curls spilling out from under her cap and was dusting her eyelashes, making them glitter. Morgana swallowed. "Yeah." She tried to shrug away the sheepish admittance. "I remember." Gwen smiled faintly, glancing away. "First kiss," she remarked, as if to herself, and wandered on down the slope, allowing Morgana to follow her. Morgana realized that she was right, of course. However much she had dismissed the idea that it counted, with both of them being girls, the light of maturity made it quite obvious that that had been her first kiss, that it had been Gwen's, too. It seemed a silly, oddly disappointing thing. That clumsy little press of mouth to mouth, bizarrely impulsive, had not been the mythical first kiss of Disney fairy tale type fame. Fair enough for Morgana to waste it on something as foolish as that, but she had essentially stolen the moment from Gwen, when Gwen could have waited for someone she actually fancied. Feeling a slight twist of guilt and
Once again thinking of the night on which she had felt Gwen up in her own bed, Morgana picked up her pace to fall into step beside her old friend. "You remember that other time we kissed, don't you?" It wasn't a question. Gwen glanced at her, then nodded, looking only a little uncomfortable. "Of course I do." Morgana took off her hat, running an anxious, cold reddened hand through her hair. I hope you didn't feel as if I imposed myself on you. I mean, we never talked about it afterwards, and I was always worried I'd upset you, and now I realize it wasn't exactly just a kiss, and I think I might have taken advantage. What? Gwen, however, now looked entirely confused. Morgana, what are you talking about? That night, Morgana insisted. The second time we kissed, in your bed, when I felt you up a bit, and the next day you couldn't look at me. For a moment, Gwen continued to look as if she had absolutely no idea what Morgana was saying, and Morgana thought they must have been talking at cross purposes somehow, because how could she be any more clear? And then Gwen turned aside and began to laugh, a little disbelievingly. Oh, she managed, after a moment. Oh, Morgana, you thought... What? Morgana herself was now rather perplexed. Well, you asked me first, didn't you? Gwen shook her head. You asked if you could kiss me, and I said yes, didn't I? I wanted you to do it, Morgana. Did you think that I only said that to keep you happy? It wasn't just a kiss, though, Morgana pointed out. I mean, I'm pretty sure I remember... Yes. Gwen looked a little self-conscious at the memory, but determinedly held Morgana's gaze. Got a bit of a grope in there somewhere, too, I think. But, I mean, I didn't tell you to stop, Morgana. I liked it. I was 15 years old. I'd never done anything like that before, and you were... You. I trusted you, and it was... nice. Oh. Morgana wasn't sure whether to feel nonplussed or deeply relieved that she had not, in fact, traumatized her friend that night. There was a long, awkward pause, pulled tight as glass between them. Then Morgana drew breath and broke it. Why couldn't you look at me the next morning, then? Then Gwen really did look embarrassed. She glanced at the frozen-over duck pond and scuffed a stone onto its surface, where it made a strange, clanking, dragging sound as it skidded to a stop. It's silly. More silly than me assuming I'd somehow molested you all these years? Morgana folded her arms. Come on, try me. Gwen laughed shortly, then bit her lip. I loved you, Morgana. She sounded so earnest when she said it that it made Morgana's stomach turn over. I loved you from the day you moved in next door, when I saw you from my bedroom window. And you had all this long, dark hair and that t-shirt with the daisies on it, and a denim skirt, and you were shouting at your mom about something, and I was utterly besotted with you, Morgana. I mean, completely and totally, head over heels. The moment I saw you, I knew that I loved you, that I was going to love you for a very, very long time. I knew it was romantic and sexual and the way that adults loved each other. I knew it was the way my father must have felt about my mother. And it didn't scare me that you were a girl, or that I was 12, or that it must mean I was gay. It just was. I loved you. I couldn't be frightened by it. I mean, I know that sounds sort of... She waved a hand, the words dying on her lips. But I tried to tell you that night in my bed after we kissed. I thought maybe that meant you loved me too. But when I asked, you said you didn't know, and... Would you please say something? Morgana consciously closed her mouth. She didn't know what this was. Gwen had felt like that? Gwen had felt like that the entire time and not said anything? And she, Morgana, queen of subtle lesbianism, hadn't had a fucking clue? She managed, somewhat unhelpfully. Except it would be just like Gwen, wouldn't it? Sweet, shy, wide-eyed, romantic Gwen would be silently, unrequitedly in love with her best friend for 4 years, wouldn't she? It was hardly out of character. And now that she thought about it,
She couldn't ever remember Gwen mentioning fancying anyone else for the length of their friendship, however often Morgana might mention a boy she didn't find repulsive, because that was what teenage girls were meant to do, or the occasional girl she thought was pretty. Gwen hadn't shown the slightest inclination towards anyone else, just stayed superglued to her until she was 16. "I'm sorry," Gwen ducked her head. "I shouldn't have said all that. It was just a crush, really. I mean, a pretty extreme crush, but you know how it is at that age." Morgana was still scrambling to find the words. She'd never been speechless before. It was not a feeling she was relishing. "That's just why it was that I couldn't look at you after." Gwen thrust her hands into her pockets, head still down, looking sheepish. "I thought I was in love with you. And when you just said we could be best friends, I thought that meant... I mean, I know I didn't exactly manage to get it across very well. You know what I was like when I was younger. I was so shy I couldn't talk to half the teachers at school, let alone profess undying love to you in a sort of semi-coherent way. And I'm rambling again, aren't I?"
"No," Morgana promised her, with a quick, shaky grin. "No, Gwen, that makes a lot of sense."
Gwen smiled back, looking relieved. Then she pulled a face.
"God, now what do we talk about?"
Morgana shrugged. "Maybe we shouldn't talk." She took Gwen's hand and quietly led her back through the park, up the road, and, after a moment of consideration, into Gwen's house rather than Uther and her mother's. Just inside the hall, they stopped to stamp frost and mud off their shoes and shrug off their jackets and hats and scarves. Impulsively, Morgana pressed her hands to Gwen's cheeks.
"You're cold," she remarked.
Gwen blinked at her.
"So are your hands."
"Sorry." Morgana didn't drop them, though. She saw Gwen hesitate. She made to step forward and then didn't, avoided her gaze and then met it. There was a moment of fumbling, clumsy swaying as they negotiated half-off shoes and the hall rug and the fact that they were both a bit taller than the last time they'd done this, and neither was quite sure what would happen until it did. The moment their mouths touched, though, was one Morgana would always recall as utterly, unquestionably perfect. It was just soft and tentative and brief, almost chaste but for the quickening of Morgana's heart in her chest, and the flush that turned Gwen's ears deep red. And when they came apart, they were both short of breath, and Gwen licked her lips and smiled, embarrassed, and scurried past her into the kitchen. Morgana was left alone to giddily contemplate the selection of china cats Gwen's mother had once collected, sitting on a shelf next to the coat rack. They ended the afternoon, in the dark now, since it was gone four, nestled conspiratorially together in the corner of Gwen's sofa in the living room, watching Free Willy, which was airing on Channel 5. There had been no negotiation about it, really. Gwen had suggested they watch TV and pressed herself contentedly against Morgana the moment she had sat down. They were sharing a blanket and had the excuse that it was warmer that way, but Morgana was too preoccupied with the feel of Gwen's brow and the crook of her neck to be worrying about how this would look if they were seen. It felt secretive and safe, though. Theirs, the way that night in Gwen's bed had been theirs, the way the first time they had kissed in the park had been theirs, just a natural closeness that was no one else's business. Gwen smelled nice, a bit like soap and a little bit like sweat. Her hair was soft, her skin was warm. Morgana had slipped a hand up the back of her jumper under her t-shirt and had splayed her fingers over the base of Gwen's spine.
"When are you going back to London?" she asked, about halfway through the movie.
Morgana considered. "Couple of days? Mum's going to want to take me shopping and stuff first. You know, mother-daughter bonding. But work's given me till the 5th, because the shop owners are in Barbados, so they're not opening back up until then." Gwen shifted a little, nestling closer to her. Morgana stroked her forehead affectionately. "You want to do something? In the next couple of days?"
"Like what?"
Gwen's lips twitched as she glanced up at her.
"Use your imagination."
Gwen kissed her again, quickly and lightly, leaving a warm, fluttering feeling in Morgana's stomach which was decidedly different to the usual warm, fluttering feeling she tended to get between her legs when such an obvious opportunity presented itself. The fact was that Morgana had never tried her hand at romance. She had slept with a good number of girls in that brief scrap of time at Oxford, and she'd had heady, exciting affairs with Nimue and Morgause, and she liked Merlin. But she'd never really experienced affection and passion in tandem before. She wasn't used to the sensation of caring, nay, worrying, about what the other person truly thought of her. She'd never felt quite the fierce, frightening, skittering of nervous excitement that Gwen's fingers induced when they skirted along her jaw and traced the curl of her ear. "Oh, God," she told Merlin that night, "I think I'm in love." "You've known her for 5 minutes," Merlin put his hands on his hips. "I've known her since I was 12," Morgana corrected. Merlin looked skeptical. "With, what, a 3-year gap in the middle? You've barely spoken since you were 16 years old, remember? You can't be in love with her yet, Morgana. Don't be daft." "Well, something weird is happening." Morgana sat down on her bed, bringing one hand despondently over her eyes. "I don't know what the hell is up, Merle. I can't decide whether I want to shag her or spend the rest of my life stroking her hair. She's adorable. She was never this adorable when we were kids." Merlin's face softened. "You like her?" "Well, clearly." Merlin snorted and shook his head. "Morgana Fay wants to do something other than spank a girl before she fucks her. That's got to be a first."
"God, yeah."
Morgana made a face. "Oh, Christ, I couldn't do that to her. I'd be scared to hurt her. Gwen's going to become my anti-kink, Merlin. I don't want to give up my kink." "And now you're just getting ahead of yourself." Merlin plonked himself down beside her on the bed and gave her a nudge. "Take her out somewhere, see how things go, yeah? If she still likes you that much, she's not going to be scared off by your affinity for whips and handcuffs." Morgana snorted, just a little skeptically. The first time they had sex was on the floor of Gwen's living room at 12:30 in the afternoon. It was the day before Morgana really, really needed to be back in London, and they'd had lunch in a local cafe. Gwen's dad was at work, had given Gwen the day off to spend with her friend before she left. They'd closed the curtains in the living room, so the place had that odd half-gloom to it, streaked with daylight. The house was chilly because they hadn't been back long enough for the heating to kick in. Morgana had watched, with interest, the goosebumps rising on Gwen's arms as she slid out of her hoodie, her t-shirt, and vest. She covered the cool flesh with her mouth, nosed her way along Gwen's arm, and curled her fingers about her wrists. She pulled off her own top and pressed Gwen down onto the blanket they'd spread on the floor, lying skin to skin, liking how warm Gwen was against the chill of the air. The radiator kept creaking, softly, as it heated up, and the room got gradually warmer as Morgana stripped Gwen out of the rest of her clothing and explored her thoroughly. "I wish we'd done this when we were younger," Gwen sighed into Morgana's hair. "We've wasted so much time." "Better make up for it then, hmm?" Morgana nipped at her ear. "Here, show me where you..." Gwen showed her, carefully and just a little hesitantly guiding Morgana's fingers down between her thighs, glancing shyly away from her as Morgana touched her, just there, pressed inside, smooth damp tendrils of hair out of Gwen's eyes with her free hand. "You are so..." She murmured it between kisses against Gwen's jaw, her collarbone. Gwen let out a single, shaky breath, and then tensed and arched as Morgana pressed a little deeper, using her thumb to graze gently over her clit. "Oh, Christ!" "Maybe it's better we waited this long," Morgana offered, with a quick, mischievous grin. "Wouldn't have been able to do that when I was 15, you know." Gwen laughed shortly, then pulled Morgana down to kiss her. "Well, that's something, then." She trailed off into another gasp, lips curling into a fierce grin as Morgana tensed her fingers against just the right spot inside her. "If you could just press a little harder." Morgana quirked her head. "Where?" Gwen flushed, lowering her gaze and turning to hide her face in Morgana's shoulder. A moment later, Morgana felt her take hold of her wrist,
curling her fingers around her friends and pressing, lifting, rearranging. There? Morgana asked, following the guidance of Gwen's good, calloused fingers. There, Gwen agreed, the word clipped, restrained. Yes, just yes, there, like that, just like that. Her voice trailed away into a bubbling breath of relief, her fingers slipping down Morgana's back, trailing sharp fingernails enough to make her shudder, Morgana thinking, God, I wish I had been doing this since we were 15. There was something incredibly good about the way Gwen felt, squirming and sighing beneath her, clenching down on Morgana's fingers, biting at her lip. Even better were Gwen's hands, one tangling in her hair, the other roaming along Morgana's spine. Her fingers were quick and clever and had little hard patches of skin where she'd worked with them. She played them down Morgana's back, then slipped her hand between them, pressing up against Morgana's crotch and then slipping inside the knickers she was still wearing. And, all right, it would have been infinitely hotter to have tied Gwen to the nearest chair and take a riding crop to her, bite her neck and ears and be just that little bit cruel before she got her off. But it was still good. Because it was Gwen. Gwen who understood her, somehow, miraculously, had always understood her. Gwen who wasn't a quick fuck or an exciting fling, but sort of important, which was nerve-wracking and somehow fantastic all at the same time. It made Morgana tremble in a way that she never had with anyone she'd slept with before, made her hands shake a little, her breath catch in her throat. She didn't quite manage an orgasm, although Gwen came with relative ease. Morgana's wealth of experience made sure of that. And the look Gwen gave her afterwards was so trusting, so warm with affection and adoration, that Morgana decided then and there that this had to happen again, preferably as soon as was humanly possible. So they started seeing each other, regularly. They drove back and forth on the weekends or got the train, depending on what was cheapest and quickest. It was pretty much 2 hours each way, which was a pain, but Gwen made Morgana incredibly, indescribably happy, and it was more than worth it. They spent hours on the phone to each other. They spent their Sundays in bed listening to Radio 4 and talking about silly, strange things, like what would happen if somebody discovered how to turn invisible, or the perfect consistency of pancakes. The working week passed in a gray, dull, meaningless blur compared to the lightness of the days they got to spend together. Morgana mapped, with great diligence, every mark on Gwen's body. She knew every freckle and mole, every scar and spot. She loved every one of them. She loved the familiarity of Gwen's body, the safety and comfort of it. She'd never been with anyone for longer than a few weeks before. She'd never felt this unguarded with a girl. She loved that Gwen could make her laugh or take her breath away in the same moment. Her modesty was charming, her self-consciousness endearing, her intelligence admirable. And it took Morgana 9 months, give or take, to get bored. Part 3. It happened as she was picking up bread and milk after work one evening and spotted Morgose at the other end of the supermarket aisle. She hadn't seen Morgose since graduating from cookery school nearly a year earlier and had barely even thought about her in the meantime. But spotting her idly examining a packet of dark chocolate, with her hair falling in loose curls down her shoulders, in a stinging scarlet dress coat, all red lips and dark eyes, and that whimsical, intense air about her that had been oh so alluring back in the day, out of nowhere, Morgana suddenly, desperately wanted to have sex with her. It didn't help that she hadn't had an orgasm that wasn't self-induced in nearly a month. The fact was that something had been gradually making itself more and more apparent of late, and that was that she and Gwen were horrifically mismatched sexually. Gwen was vanilla, gorgeous and sensual and passionate and very, very sexy in her own right. Morgana would have been hard-pressed to be turned on at all when they had sex if that wasn't the case, but the kinkiest thing about the woman was her hair. Morgana found herself unable to so much as talk about her love of handcuffs with Gwen. The idea of suggesting to sweet, funny, adoring Gwen that she would quite like to tie her up and break out the nipple clamps was terrifying. Morgana couldn't really conceive of Gwen in that sort of way. She was so the antithesis of anyone Morgana had ever slept with before. But the fact of the matter was that if she wanted to get off, Morgana needed the sex to be rough. She needed the fierce tension of the will of the dominant partner against the lust of the submissive, the trepidation and sweat and pain and boiling pleasure that was always just enough to outweigh the tension. She needed her partner to be squirming and kicking and squealing, preferably through a gag. She needed the intensity of the bond that kind of trust formed. Gwen had done far better than Morgana might have thought she would. She did, after all, manage to get off every now and again, because Gwen was good with that gorgeous mouth of hers. Those orgasms, however, were never as intense or as satisfying as Morgana was used to. She'd told Gwen that she just didn't climax easily, that she didn't mind. And she kind of didn't, anyway. Gwen was great. Gwen was brilliant, in fact. So what if the sex wasn't mind-blowing? It was still good. There was still a lot of pleasure to be had in being all tangled and sweaty and close, giggling and whispering and naked at 4 in the afternoon, totally relaxed, comfortable, and safe. But, she missed rope burns and riding crops, especially riding crops. And Margot's had been the last person she'd used one on. Not that Margot's hadn't used one on her fairly liberally as well. They'd both enjoyed being dominant too much to give the role up entirely, so they'd switched about a bit. Almost sensing her presence, Margot's had looked up abruptly, and that slow, laconic smile had touched the corners of her lips, head quirked, eyes brightening. "How've you been?" she asked, over the dark chocolate. "All right," Morgana shrugged. Calmly, Margot's peeled open the cardboard edges of the chocolate wrapper, and ran her fingernail over the foil beneath, slitting it open, breaking off the top square with a mischievous smile. "Just all right?" "Well, you know," Morgana found herself smiling back, a flicker of something sharp and troublesome blooming into existence in the pit of her stomach. "I might if you tell me about it," Margot's offered, breaking off a second square and holding it out to her. "Over coffee, if you're not hurrying off somewhere." "Now? No, I don't have anywhere to be," Morgana found herself saying, too easily, too lightly. She took the square of dark chocolate and laid it on her tongue. "Good," Margot's remarked brightly. She dropped the open chocolate into her basket. "Let's go and pay and we can go somewhere, okay?" "Okay," Morgana followed her with a terrible sense of calm. They ended up sat in a Starbucks, sipping coffee and exchanging loaded pleasantries for half an hour, until Margot's took a disturbingly direct approach to their situation. "I think breaking things off between us might have been a mistake." Morgana blinked, and then took a deep breath. Shit. "Margot's?" I know. Margot's shook her head, flicking a pale gold lock of hair back off one shoulder. "We both knew it wasn't going to progress anywhere, but... does that really matter? We could have allowed it to carry on for longer than, what, a month or so, wasn't it?" Morgana nodded, mutely. "What would have been the harm?" Margot's asked, the question directed more to the air in general than to her companion. "I don't know, Morgana. We almost had a functioning relationship there for a while, even if we were both going to end up wanting different things." Morgana promptly began a studious examination of her fingernails. Shit, shit, shit. The problem here was that Margot's was, in fact, correct. Their fling had been far more functional than the one she had conducted with Nimue previous to it. With Nimue, it really had just been about the rough, dirty, kinky sex. And occasionally they'd cook for each other, although Nimue never could resist standing over her shoulder at the stove, criticizing her work. With Margot's, well, after the initial drunken tumble they'd taken in the cloakroom of a club at 3 in the morning, Margot's had been nice. They had a few things in common, beyond the sex. They both liked coffee and old books. They shared a dry sense of humor and an eye for high fashion. She could remember a number of times, curled up with her head on Margot's shoulder, tangled in the sheets with rope burns fresh on her wrists, Margot's gently stroking her hair and murmuring sweet things into her ear, thinking that she could be happy like this. Their only real obstacle, outside of the student-teacher relationship, had been the age gap, 11 years. Whilst Morgana had only just entered her 20s, Morgause had already reached 30, and their lives were at completely different stages of development. Morgana, at the time at least, was looking for casual flings, for good sex with pizza afterwards, for pretty girls who wouldn't mind impromptu trips to obscure bits of the world, or staying up all night drinking and loudly singing the lyrics to S Club 7 songs, who didn't mind living in matchbox-sized flats with sheets over the windows instead of curtains. Morgause, on the other hand, owned her own place, had a steady job and a circle of sophisticated friends, liked reading the papers after sex, and was vaguely beginning to look for someone she could start a family with. She wanted to have a baby before she turned 36, and she wanted to move out of her flat and into a house with a garden in the suburbs. Morgana, while she wasn't against any of that in principle, was absolutely not ready to go there yet, let alone in the next couple of years. They had both known that going in. Despite how well they'd got on, despite how amazing the sex was, that ultimately what they had could only be short-term, because Morgana was not going to be the sort of partner Morgause wanted. In the end, Morgana had called it quits because she was starting to realize exactly how compatible they were in just about every conceivable way, and she could see how absolutely shattering things would be if they stayed together for, say, 6 months, got far more entangled than they already were, and then were finally forced into the inevitable breakup anyway. Morgause had agreed, with a certain amount of reluctance, and they'd agreed to stop seeing each other. Still, it had left Morgana with a heavy little pill of regret in the pit of her stomach for a while afterwards. If she'd been 10 years older, or Morgause 10 years younger, they might have had something kind of special. "You already have something special," a little accusatory voice in the back of her mind promptly reminded her. "You're with Gwen, remember? That girl who brings you snowdrops and spatulas and makes you feel all warm and fuzzy and who you think you've fallen in love with but haven't told yet because the L-word scares the shit out of you." "Are you going to say anything?" Morgause asked, arching one delicate eyebrow at her. Morgana smiled apologetically and looked away. "Tell her about Gwen. Tell her now, or this is going to end exceptionally badly." She didn't, though. She didn't until they were back in Morgause's flat, and she was half undressed, and Morgause's hands were pinning her to the living room floor, and oh God, it felt so good to be held down, to be pushed and pulled and bitten, and to be unafraid to scratch and kick and hiss, and, "I'm seeing someone." Morgana sat up abruptly, pushing Morgause away from her. She could already feel something deep and disgusted within herself welling up in her gut. Her name is Gwen, and I can't. I'm sorry." Morgause looked a little stunned, then worse, hurt. "Oh," was all she said. Morgana would have far preferred her to be angry. "I should go," Morgana murmured, clambering awkwardly to her feet and gathering up her clothes. Morgause nodded and wordlessly held the door of her flat open. It was raining and dark outside as Morgana stood on the street and realized that she'd left the bread and milk in Morgause's flat, and there was no way she could go back up and get it. She shivered and began to walk home. By the time she got to the place she still shared with Merlin, she was soaked and shaking and, for reasons she couldn't quite fathom, sobbing bitterly. So, of course, she ended up having to tell Merlin everything, as he helped her out of her clothes and ran her a bath. "So you almost..." Merlin looked disbelieving. "I don't think it matters that it was only almost." Morgana looked down miserably. "I still snogged her and undressed her and... I mean, it could just as easily have been not almost, but actually. But I thought you really... I mean, you love Gwen." The expression on Merlin's face was one which Morgana never wanted to see directed at her again. "I know," she told him. "I know, I know. I'm an awful, disgusting, stupid person." Merlin shook his head slowly. "But why, Morgana? What on earth made you think it would be a good idea to even have coffee with her, for God's sake?" "I don't know," Morgana informed him, completely untruthfully. "Look, I just want to have a bath and go to bed and think what the hell to do in the morning, okay?" "Yeah, okay," Merlin sighed, in such a way as to suggest that it was anything but, and left her alone in the bathroom. Half an hour later, however, he came back in and sat down next to the tub, gazing at her mournfully. "Would you please stop?" Morgana asked, more than a little peeved. "It's the sex, isn't it?" Merlin ignored her request. "You haven't tried to talk to Gwen about what you like in bed yet, have you?" Morgana refused to answer him, sinking a little lower into the bathwater, which was starting to get cold. "As much as I generally tried not to be," Merlin folded his arms, "I was here when you were sleeping with Nimue, and Morgose, and that girl from the Chinese takeaway, and that other girl from the library. I know what you sound like when you're getting busy with a rope and a riding crop, and you haven't made any of those sounds with Gwen. Haven't you even suggested something other than vanilla sex yet?" Morgana sighed, watching her breath send gentle waves across the surface of the bathwater. "She's just not that sort of girl." "How do you know?" "I know her. Before she told you she'd liked it, you harbored the delusion that you'd basically assaulted her that night when you were 15, Merlin pointed out. "The Gwen you have in your head isn't always who she is in person. You know that. I mean, I get that you worship this girl, but you don't do either of you favors when you put her up on a pedestal like that. She's not a little kid anymore, and she's not made of glass. If you've never talked about it with her, you have no idea what she'd be open to in bed. And clearly, you need to talk about it with her. If the lack of the kind of sex you like is driving you to this kind of behavior, then you do need to talk about it." Morgana grimaced, mostly because he was absolutely right, and she didn't like it. How on earth was she supposed to even start that kind of conversation? She'd never had to artificially create the circumstances for sex to be kinky before. She was good at picking up the types who were that way inclined. She knew very well the kind of personality that lent itself to that kind of behavior, so that even if they'd never tried it before, most of the girls she slept with were at least curious about trying what she wanted to do. But it was different with someone you always knew, someone you'd already been sleeping with for months. "Oh, by the way, sweetheart, I was just thinking that maybe I could tie you up and spank you tonight." As it turned out, though, the conversation arrived on its own terms, with her and Gwen's first real row. From that day to this, Morgana never worked out how Gwen found out what she had done with Morgose. She didn't know if Merlin had told her, or if Gwen had guessed that something had happened and prized the details out of Merlin, or if Merlin had told someone else who had told someone within their extended circle of friends, and somehow something had got back to Gwen. Whatever it was, 1 week after nearly but not quite sleeping with Morgose, Gwen knew. Morgana arrived home from work to find Gwen in the flat and Merlin conspicuously absent. She was in the kitchen, doing their washing up with such vigor that it sounded as if she might be about to smash most of their crockery. "What are you doing here?" Morgana felt an odd rush of the usual pleasure at seeing her girlfriend suddenly mingling with a horrible suspicion. Gwen turned round abruptly. She had soap suds in her hair and a very nasty look in her eye, and was clutching Merlin's favorite Doctor Who mug. "If I hadn't found out, would you have told me?" she asked, after a few seconds of excruciating silence. Morgana's heart turned to lead in her chest and promptly sank down to her toes. "Oh, Gwen, you know, I'm not really sure I want to hear the answer to that." Gwen cut her off, turned the mug over in her hands. She sounded cold. Morgana had never heard her sound cold before. "Gwen, I'm sorry. I don't even..." Gwen shook her head violently, soap suds flying. "Don't even start, Morgana. I can't hear you apologize right now, because I'm not going to forgive you that easily." "I don't expect you to forgive me." "Yes, you do," Gwen spat. "You do, or you wouldn't have done it. You have this ridiculous notion of me somewhere, Morgana, that I'm some sort of saint, that I'll bless everything you do, swallow whatever bullshit you pull because I'm too sweet and too good to harbor anything even remotely resembling resentment." "I don't..." "Of course you do," Gwen cried. "You expect me to believe that you only had two other sexual partners before me? That you're that good with your hands? Or that you never slept with Merlin? Or that you're not even the tiniest bit kinky? or that you really work all the hours that you do, and the fact that you can't come to Bath more often has nothing to do with the fact that you just get tired and lazy after work. I wouldn't care, Morgana. I wouldn't care about any of those things, but the fact that you feel the need to make up stupid little lies to cover them up. I mean, Jesus fucking Christ, I'm not 12 years old anymore. Morgana felt a sharp-edged wave of shock hit her like ice water. How do you even... I repeat... Gwen slammed Merlin's mug down on the side so hard that Morgana heard it chip. I am not 12 years old anymore. It's been 9 months. I've got to know you enough to know you these days, and you're nowhere near as good a liar as you think you are. Oh, was all Morgana could manage, swallowing hard. Shit. Gwen barely swallowed a bitter laugh and turned her chin up to gaze at the ceiling. For one horrible moment, Morgana thought she might be about to cry, but... No, she was angry. She was really, really angry. Why did you do it? She asked after a moment. I mean, seriously, Morgana, what the hell were you even thinking? Morgana suspected she would have preferred tears. Gwen didn't just sound angry. She sounded repulsed, disgusted. I wasn't, was all she could tell her, shaking her head and clamping her hands together to stop them beginning to shake. Gwen. Well, what? Gwen demanded, unsatisfied. Is she prettier than me? Blonder? Whiter? Straighter hair? What? No. Morgana shook her head. I mean, she's white, but that's not... What then? Gwen clenched her fists. What the hell is so special about her that you could just stop thinking? It wasn't her... So it was me? No! So you're just a cheating slut, is what you're saying. Gwen's voice was so venomous that it didn't even sound like her anymore. Well, yes, clearly I must be. In face of Gwen's temper, Morgana finally lost her own. It was a mistake, Gwen. A stupid little impulse that I stopped before anything really happened. Oh, so you'd be fine if I went off and groped one of my exes then. That's not what I meant. It certainly sounded like that was what you meant. I said I was sorry. Which sounds very sincere now, Morgana, really. Oh, for fuck's sake. Why the hell do you get to be angry? These things happen, Gwen, Morgana snapped. This is who I am. Sometimes I do stupid things for no good reason. If you know me so well, you should have worked that out by now, too. So by knowing who you are, I implicitly grant permission for you to fuck whoever you want without telling me. We didn't. You might as well have. And then, somehow, in a split second of breathless, stinging silence, before Morgana could quite register what was happening, Gwen was across the 3 paces between them and had crushed her mouth to Morgana's with enough force to slam her into the nearest wall. Gwen's fingers were urgent and rough and unceremonious as she raked them through Morgana's hair and thrust them down the front of her jeans. Her tongue was bruising, her mouth harsh, possessive. Morgana found herself taking fistfuls of Gwen's shirt, yanking her closer, fighting to get her arms about Gwen's, to tug her head back, to gasp for breath against her lips. They tumbled into Morgana's bedroom barely a minute later, Gwen already hauling Morgana's top off over her head, shoving her onto the bed and straddling her a moment later. Gwen, shut up! She kissed her again, hard, and Morgana swallowed a moan of desperate, aching lust, dragging Gwen down closer against her, forcing them both onto their sides, pushing her hands up under Gwen's shirt, only to be thoroughly distracted by Gwen's fingers being abruptly thrust back between her legs, raking over her crotch. Even through her jeans, the sensation was agonizingly arousing, more so as Gwen sank her teeth into Morgana's exposed collarbone, making her yelp with shock more than pain. Jesus! Fuck! I swear to God, Morgana, if you say another word... Gwen roughly yanked open the front of Morgana's jeans, as Morgana went back to tugging off Gwen's shirt before she could become distracted again. It was quick and frenetic and painful as fuck, but Morgana came, hard, 5 minutes later, bucking against Gwen's mouth as she jammed a fourth finger deep inside her and bit down just there. For a long, long time, neither of them said a word. Gwen lay with her back to her, breath gradually evening out, shoulders shaking. Then she rolled onto her back and turned an unreadable expression on Morgana. Morgana scanned her gaze for something, anything, to indicate the current state of her girlfriend's mood.
and drew a blank. Stretching with a slightly shaky hand, Morgana reached to very, very gently brush her knuckles against Gwen's shoulder. "I'm sorry," she told her, softly. "I know," Gwen replied, just as softly. Morgana watched her for a moment, the sweat still moist on her brow, the brilliant halo of wild curls in disarray, her own teeth marks on her neck, scratches on her ribs. "Do you think you can forgive me?" "I don't know," Gwen said, looking, for the first time, just a little regretful. Morgana nodded and glanced away, swallowing.
"God, please don't let this be it. Please don't let this be us breaking up."
"I need you to tell me," Gwen began again, suddenly. "Exactly what happened, Morgana. When, where, why. You have to tell me now, okay?" Morgana nodded again, closing her eyes. She spoke quietly, trying to keep her voice even, emotionless. She divulged every detail, from the moment she had spotted Margot's in the supermarket to the conversation with Merlin afterwards. She didn't hold a single detail back, and when she finished, she realized that she was beginning to cry, horrible, humiliating, self-pitying tears welling up behind her eyelids. Gwen didn't try to comfort her. She lay still next to her, watching silently as Morgana finished her story and nodded. Then she sat up and slid off the bed. "I should go." "Gwen." Morgana sat up too, suddenly panicked. "Please don't. Don't call me for a couple of days, okay?" Gwen was pulling her clothes back on, not looking at her, her voice growing thick with what Morgana suspected were tears of her own. "I have to clear my head." Morgana bit her lip, but decided that that was the best she could hope for, currently, and only nodded, frantically blotting her tears on the back of her hand. Yeah. She waited until she heard the front door of the flat slam closed behind her before sliding back down into the bed, dragging the duvet up over her head and sobbing bitterly into the mattress, which still smelled of sex. It was three of the most miserable days of Morgana's life since her father had died, before Gwen called, sounding preoccupied on the phone. Morgana tried not to sound as desperately relieved as she felt at hearing her voice. You okay?" she asked, a little breathlessly. "I suppose," Gwen replied, a little distractedly. "I'm going to come over this weekend, okay? I think we need to talk. Properly, I mean." "Yeah, of course." "I'll see you sort of midday Saturday, then." "Okay, great." Gwen had already hung up. They did not, however, end up doing much of anything that would be considered verbal communication that weekend, but the sex continued to be fantastic. Morgana managed to have more orgasms over the next day and a half than she'd had in the entirety of their relationship previously. Gwen was harsh and fierce and full of an anxious, possessive passion, and Morgana felt herself boiling with something just as fierce, just as frighteningly real. Every scratch and bite mark, every fingertip-shaped bruise, every sharp needle of pain awash with pleasure, gave air to another grievance, exercised another frustration. And by 3 a.m. on Monday morning, huddled together in Morgana's bed, a strange sense of companionable calm had settled over the pair of them. "I have to be on a train in 4 hours," Gwen told Morgana softly. "I know. I should get some sleep." "You should." Gwen met her gaze and laughed abruptly, quick and warm, casting her hands heavenwards. Morgana giggled, too. It felt good to laugh all of a sudden. She nestled closer to her, stroking fronds of hair out from her eyes. "I love you, Gwen," she said it tenderly, without pretense or fear. A soft, humble statement of fact. Gwen paused for a moment, then drew Morgana's knuckles to her lips and kissed them. "I know you do." Morgana nodded, continuing to stroke Gwen's hair. "I'm sorry I called you a slut." Morgana couldn't help a wry smile at that. "I kind of am one, to be fair," Gwen laughed shortly. "Still, I shouldn't have called you that like it was a bad thing. I think I deserved an insult or two at some point, though." Gwen delicately touched one of the fresh bite marks on Morgana's shoulder, tracing the deep red stain her teeth had left on the skin with a finger. "Don't ever do it again, Morgana." "I won't," Morgana breathed it like a promise. "I swear, Gwen, never, ever, ever. Because once more, Morgana, I don't care if it's as little as a kiss. If you're ever unfaithful again..." I know," Morgana nodded firmly. "I will never, ever touch another woman, Gwen. Not as long as we're together. Be glad I love you too, Morgana. Be really, really glad." "I am," Morgana replied, feeling her eyes inexplicably filling with tears. What on earth had Gwen brought out in her? "I really am." Looking back some years later, it was quite clear to both of them that the entire incident had actually probably saved their relationship, has certainly guaranteed its strength for far longer than it would have gone on had it never been tested. If nothing else, the sex abruptly got much, much better. It had been more than adequate before, even if Morgana didn't get to come particularly regularly. But the joys of rough, possessive, angry sex improved their love life vastly, and Gwen's new stipulations as to the boundaries of their relationship, that whilst they didn't need to share everything, it was certainly time for Morgana to stop keeping the details of her life that she thought Gwen somehow too pure to hear away from her, suddenly opened up communication between them far more effectively than it had before. Gwen didn't in the least bit mind occasionally being held down and fucked, so long as Morgana went down on her afterwards, which Morgana considered to be a spectacularly good trade-off. They experimented with rope and handcuffs, and blindfolds and gags and riding crops, and a number of other rather interesting items, and eventually hit upon a combination that kept them both content. After another year, when Morgana had finally got a place as a commis in a 5-star-rated restaurant, Gwen began to look for work in London, away from her father's garage, so that she could move into the city and they could spend more time together. Merlin, whose pay was now halfway decent because he had finally got off the bottom rung in the restaurant he worked in, offered to move out of his and Morgana's flat so that she and Gwen could live there on their own. He had his eye on his own place, and, Morgana was fairly sure, was entertaining fantasies about inviting Arthur back there to seduce him. Even if he weren't straight as a doorpost, she informed her friend one evening, over Gwen's head whilst they were watching a film on TV. "Arthur's too scared of his dad to take you up on any offers he might have going, Merlin." "I don't fancy the bloke," Merlin retorted, without much conviction. Even Gwen could only giggle in response, nestling closer to Morgana, who was delicately tracing the outline of a rope burn on Gwen's left wrist. Morgana continued to believe that Merlin was tying himself to a completely lost cause, until the day she arrived at his new flat with a housewarming gift, and Arthur answered the door in his boxers. For one long, silent moment, each step-sibling regarded the other with equal amounts of bemusement. Arthur looked a little rumpled, his hair stuck up all over the place, eyes still bleary with sleep, absent-mindedly scratching the back of his head. Merlin abruptly appeared behind him, hopping into a pair of jeans. He paused as he spotted Morgana, then grinned. "Fewer daddy issues than you'd think," he informed her, giving Arthur's shoulder an affectionate pat. Arthur blinked again, then gave Morgana a helpless little shrug. Morgana snorted and pushed past him into the flat. Uther flipped his shit when he found out, of course, and safe to say that Merlin was no longer welcome at dinner over Christmas anymore, though, to his credit, Arthur insisted that he would stay away too, as long as Merlin was disallowed. So that Christmas, the first one which Gwen and Morgana shared in their flat, they all had Christmas together. Gwen's dad had come out to stay. Merlin and Morgana made dinner. Arthur and Gwen washed up. Gwen's father got contentedly drunk and then tearily informed Morgana that he didn't care that she and Gwen were lesbians because she had made his little girl so happy. And then he promptly fell asleep on their sofa. And very late that night, Morgana tied Gwen to their bed and ran her tongue over every part of her that was reachable. Tom died a little over 3 months later. Gwen had gone home for the weekend, and then Morgana abruptly stopped hearing from her for 48 hours. On the verge of calling the police and reporting her missing on the second day of not getting any answer to her voice messages or texts or emails, Morgana arrived back at the flat to discover Gwen sat in the front room, staring blankly at the switched-off television.
"Where the hell have you been?" Morgana's relief flashed fury before she had time to register that something was clearly, seriously wrong.
Gwen glanced at her as if she were having trouble registering her existence. Her eyes were glassy with tears, her face a horrible grayish yellow.
"Dad's dead," she said, sounding like a glass shard splintering.
"He died yesterday." Gwen didn't eat for, in Morgana's estimation, a week after that. After the funeral, she took her girlfriend home, undressed her like a child, and tucked her into bed. She lay with her all night, watching the inky pools of Gwen's eyes gazing at the ceiling, trying to think of some way to reach into that terrible haze Gwen had disappeared into and pull her free again. She begged another week off from work to stay with her, and Gwen spent most of that week sitting on the floor in the corner of the kitchen, watching Morgana cook. And when Morgana made her broth and soft, fluffy white bread, she sipped a little and smiled wetly.
"I'm okay, Morgana."
Morgana fed her another spoonful.
"I know, babe."
Epilogue. Merlin did, in fact, arrive in time to make his chestnut stuffing for the turkey on Christmas Day, and the meal was good, and presents were exchanged, and the boys got drunk and fell asleep in front of the Doctor Who special, stretched out, as much as was possible, on a beanbag on the floor, having given up the sofa to their guests. Gwen huddled closer to Morgana.
"You okay?" Morgana inquired, giving her a nudge.
Gwen yawned. "Good." Morgana pressed a quick, soft kiss to her forehead.
"Morgana?"
"Yeah?" Gwen tipped her head back so that she could look her properly in the eye and touched an idle finger to her girlfriend's chin.
"Let's get married."
Morgana blinked, a little nonplussed.
"What?"
"You heard me." Gwen's smile was sleepy, affectionate. Morgana was still struggling to process the implication behind Gwen's ever-so-casual request.
"Was that a proposal?"
"I could get down on one knee if it would make you feel better." Gwen rubbed one eye distractedly. "I don't have a ring, though." Morgana continued to gaze at her, torn between bemusement and terror and a sudden, wondrous delight. Mistaking her hesitation for trepidation, Gwen smiled a little sheepishly.
"You don't have to. I mean, say anything. I mean, you can forget I said anything if you want. My dad's not here anymore. You're the only family I have left, and I want you to be my family, legally, properly. So we're both protected, and no one can ever deny us our rights to each other, and..."
"Yes," Morgana said, fast, before she could change her mind, before the joy could be swallowed by the terror.
"Yes, let's get married. Let's have dresses and flowers and a cake and something blue and fuck knows what else. Just, you know, everything. Let's get old and wrinkly and boring together and have kids or a dog or..."
Gwen kissed her, hard and sweet and warm, and it wasn't until after that that Morgana realized that her vision was swimming because her eyes had filled with tears. Gwen blotted them for her with her sleeve, and for a moment there was just their brows touching and their fingers tangled together.
"Okay," Gwen told her softly.
"Good."
"Good,"
Morgana agreed, reaching up a shaky hand to stroke a few of Gwen's curls back behind her ear for her.
"Should we wake up the boys and tell them?"
Gwen glanced at Merlin and Arthur, Arthur beginning to snore, Merlin tucked up under his chin, mouth open, a string of silver saliva beginning to pool from his lips onto Arthur's shirt. She giggled.
"Let's, leave them for a bit. I've got a better idea of what to do with the rest of this afternoon."
"Can we use the purple strap-on?"
"Of course."
The end. This has been a recording of Merrily on High, written by Numerid for the Camelot Solstice 2009 Fic and Art Exchange, read by Sophie Nisba for Kink Bingo 2011. If you'd like to leave feedback, you can contact the author at gnimaerd, that's dreaming spelled backwards, .livejournal.com, or contact me at sophinisba.dreamwith.org. Thanks so much for listening.